Hey, there's Pete Smith. How you doing, Pete?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good too. I'm good too. Because we are back. The Gang of Three is back. And you may be, looking at the screen saying, well, how can it be a Gang of Three when there's only two? Well, Lane had his Macintosh blowed up on him. Thanks to a power surge, but Fred is going to drop by, and so we're going to be able to talk to both Fred and Pete, both of whom have been at camp, and we'll be able to get some of that firsthand knowledge over the course of the next hour. Well, let's get going, Pete. Five practices in, I guess six practices now. The guy who was supposed to be winning the quarterback job is losing it. Week one's in the books. The pads came on today. The Browns are 12 days from a real preseason game in Chicago. So we're going to talk about that horse race at quarterback. We're going to talk a little bit of defense, which has been eating some rookies and pressing and various loose ends if we have enough time. So the numbers coming into today, I'm not sure if the numbers changed today or not. But Watson has thrown six interceptions. Sanders has thrown one, which was on a deep ball to Jerry Jeudy. And the media is sort of closing ranks now, saying that Watson is losing it and that Sanders has the early advantage now that, we're actually in training camp. So, the way the horse race is playing out in the media was Deshaun early and now Shadur coming back and a little bit of buzz for Dylan Gabriel. Is that what you're seeing? The media consensus, is that what you're seeing at camp? Or is the media overreacting a bit?
Well, horse race suggests that both animals are going forward, and I would disagree with that take right off the rip. Look, I understand why the Browns have to go through these motions, and I will give them until Thursday to sort of do this thing because Thursday is the end of their offensive installs, and so be it. They can go through this. Deshaun Watson is not a serious quarterback, and we can do this thing where we're going to pretend that interceptions are okay and he's trying things and all that. But Todd Monken is the guy who says, I don't want to deal with bad football. Deshaun Watson is the definition of bad football. There are times he makes some plays, but you mentioned the interceptions. There are too many plays where they are just bad. And you can sit there and go, well, this, that, and the other thing. They're bad. So do I think Shadur Sanders has seized the job? No. There are things that I like about what he's doing, and I can see a path where it's getting better. But the bottom line is, I think if there's a second horse, it's Dylan Gabriel at this point. I think Deshaun Watson is dead in the stall at this point. And I'm hoping that basically starting Friday, it's going to be reflected in the reps that they're talking about Dylan Gabriel should get more reps. Okay, I'm with you on that. But they should be coming from Watson. They should not make this into three contenders for the job. They should just stop pretending that one of them is a real contender because he's not. And if you're going to get a truer evaluation of Dylan, it needs to be with better guys. And then for the Shadur part, the stuff that he needs to get better at, he just needs to rep. Some of what he's dealing with is film stuff and meetings and stuff. It's pre-snap. He's better post-snap than Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson may be great pre-snap. He may be the best at pre-snap. Post-snap, he's a train wreck. And that's where this thing is. And I don't know what is being said behind closed door on how long they're going to live this lie, but it is a lie.
Now, Monken was pretty specific when he talked to the press the other day. He said the most important thing is, from a process standpoint, how are we operating at the line of scrimmage? Where are their eyes? Have they taken command of the huddle? And then cadence, and then understanding the concepts. Now, understanding the concepts, Watson should be ahead, but doesn't that set of criteria bode pretty well for Dylan Gabriel, Kevin Stefanski's old supercomputer? I'm having a hard time taking Gabriel seriously, but if he's showing out at camp, he's showing out at camp.
Well, the way I've put it is like most people treat Dylan Gabriel like he's an afterthought. And there's probably people in that building who treat Dylan Gabriel like an afterthought. But the reality is he's there. So they're going to see what he can do. And if he can sort of change minds, so be it. So we'll see if he can do enough of that. And he may be, look, I've been saying all along, I think Dylan Gabriel is going to torch the preseason. I think he's going to slice and dice opponents. But we've seen a lot of guys do that. And this is more other teams in Cleveland, but we've seen guys tear it up in the preseason against backups. And when it comes to playing against, you know, real Sunday football, they can't do it. Can Dylan Gabriel make that transition? I suspect he's going to kill backups because he does do a really good job pre-snap. He does a pretty good job post-snap, and I think he's getting better. But good question. So I want to see it. So the way I'd sort of like suggest is that I think Shador and Dylan are basically tied pre-snap. With Sanders as the third by virtue of that. And then post-snap, Deshaun Watson might be fourth. He's that bad. I'll say third to be generous, but he might be fourth. And then it's Shador by a little bit, and then Dylan is probably right behind Shador in that. Now, how big is the baseline that we're sitting here talking about this, where we're sitting there going, well, that sounds great. Sounds like Dylan's doing a really good job. Well, that's relative to what he's facing. So, got to see the competition. Obviously, we really got to the joint practices. But as I said before, like if we get to the joint practices and Deshaun Watson is still a serious consideration, I will have major questions because, again, you're just living a lie, and that is 17 days from today.
Right. In terms of Gabriel, you know, I'm kind of cynical because I saw him cruise at times during the preseason last year. And then when he actually got into play, he looked overmatched, right? He looked like he was unable to see the receivers down the field. He was throwing the ball away, you know, checking down almost instantly. You know, do you think from all your football watching that it's possible for a quarterback who starts out that poorly to turn things around in an off season? You know, sure. I'm skeptical. I'm sorry.
I'm not going to, because we've seen it happen. I'm not going to say it's going to happen. I think that is, again, to be determined. I think some of what Dylan Gabriel ran into last year was the offense was overmatched. And I don't think he had a great plan for how to get his body in position to make throws when they were there. He just was not ready to either see it or his body wasn't in position to make plays, because there were numerous times where we would watch and see on tape where, like, Isaiah Bond is behind everybody waving his hand and Dylan Gabriel just couldn't get the ball to him or wasn't in position to throw it. If he's come up with those answers, that will go a long way. Mm-hmm. I've never questioned that Dylan Gabriel has enough arm. It's not to say he's some monster rocket-armed quarterback, but he's not. I think a lot of people think because he's short, his arm is weak. It's not. It's entirely about, can he see it? Can he get to a point where he can see it and then make the throw? And if he can do those things, he can be okay. Now, does any of that add up to a franchise quarterback that we're going to stop talking about the 27 class? I doubt it, but I'm going to see if he can do it, because we have seen guys – Cleveland in particular has seen these guys who can just do things well, be really smart, not a great arm, and just do enough to make it work. Brian Hoyer was one of those guys. Like, we've seen this type of quarterback operate. Now, that also, when you're working with that type of offense, it does put more of the weight on your supporting cast. Now, it seems like the Browns have way better wide receivers now. It seems like they have really good running backs. The offensive line is a question to be answered, and that's going to be one we figure out. And then Harold Fannin is great. So there's a lot to be sort of figured out. But if, like, you were to put Dylan Gabriel on a great team, could he manage it and be okay? Yeah, he probably can. Is that going to be enough to get you where you want to go? I'm not there yet.
Right. Got a question from an MC in the chat room. He says, from the clips I've seen, it appears DG drives the ball much better than Shador Sanders. Is that true? Are you seeing that? You were talking about the quality of his arm.
Well, I think some of that is true, and then some of that is by virtue of just the touch that Shador likes to put on the ball, because he's got so many tools in the bag. Where Dylan is a lot of the times trying to drive the football. He likes to get it going and get it where it is. This is my point, is like from a velocity and zip type element, I think Dylan's fine. Like, again, people sort of overstate and assume, oh, he's little, he must be weak. He's not. So I think on average, he probably puts more, a little more zip on the ball than Shador does. But I think some of that is a product of just the amount of different throws Shador has. But Shador does not have a great arm. And when he doesn't have his body right, you can sort of see that. I don't think he's ever going to have an overwhelming arm, but I think he can do things to sort of help himself. But they don't have – like Deshaun Watson – I mean, look, everybody is watching Talon Green throw missiles out there. And by comparison, nobody can keep up with him. Like, his arm is on another level compared to that. So if you look at him as sort of the barometer, you can see just how far behind everybody else is by contrast.
Hmm. Well, a guy who supposedly did not come in here with any preconceived notions as a head coach, he said the other day, I haven't coached any of these four quarterbacks until now. I haven't been around them. I don't have any preconceived notions of who they've been or where they're going. Do you buy that? You know, it would seem to me like if he didn't have any preconceived notions, Watson – you know, would be rapidly demoted.
Well, whether he did or didn't, he's had them for the whole offseason program, save for Talon Green, who was drafted and then added in the OTAs and stuff. And then he's had him for this into training camp. So I hope he's conceived some notions by now that he's sort of got an idea of where these things are going. And he likes to remind the media that we have eyes. Well, so does he. So he's got to see what we're doing. And there are things you can sit there and go, well, we're looking for this and we're working on this, and so be it. But, you know, just watching it, you can tell that it's not where it's supposed to be with particularly Watson, and that part is really lagging behind. And that's where I said, you know, Thursday is my drop dead date of the installs are in. Friday, to me, should be the day they are starting. We should start seeing movement on certain depth charts. And that's not the only position I see it. There are other positions where that's going to happen sooner than later. But you can sort of look at some of those and say the Browns have a plan with their rookies and they're sort of building them up in a certain way. They don't have that with the quarterback position, other than Talon Green, who's not really a factor yet. It is a veteran and 2 second-year quarterbacks. They don't need to baby them in that regard. Now, I don't have a problem. Again, I don't have a problem with Shador going with the twos and alternating because I think it actually has been good for him. Mm-hmm. I think he has built some confidence against the twos and then carried a little bit of that against the ones when he's gotten that opportunity. But the time is fast approaching. Friday, to me, is when you've got to start seeing movement. Again, even if you keep rotating Sanders like you are, Dylan's got to start. If Dylan's moving up and doing more reps, they should come completely from Watson at this point.
You know, you talk about changes on the depth chart. It would seem to me that wide receiver would be one of those positions where you would expect to see some movement. With Boston and Concepcion have been playing with the twos, right?
Yep, for the most part.
Yeah, I don't see that holding up very long. What are some other positions where you think there's going to be some movement caused by new talent in the depth chart?
Well, the biggest one's left tackle. DeJuan Jones is coming back from an injury. I'm sure the team will say otherwise. He doesn't look right yet, and I think at some point it's doing a disservice to him. But he's also not a good run blocker, and I don't care where you put him. You want to put him at right tackle, it's a waste of time. I've always said he should play on the left if he's going to play at all. But they have a kid that they want out, that they are going to want out there. And what's really jarring is the first day of pads is watching DeJuan Jones next to Zion Johnson. Zion Johnson is like a sports car at guard. He's so athletic. To then compare that to DeJuan Jones, who is just enormous, but he's just not moving well. And I think they want to get to a point where they have Fano and Zion next to each other because they are both really, really athletic. They want those guys to be a big part of the running game. Hopefully, based on just the way they're doing it, that should be tomorrow. I don't know if they'll have pads on tomorrow or not, but those two back together is where this thing's ultimately headed. But offensive line is certainly the tackle position's one spot that's certainly going to change. And then we shall see how long it takes. But Emmanuel McNeil Warren seems to be gaining confidence pretty quickly. He has gotten rave reviews from both staff and teammates about how much he's, even though he wasn't practicing during OTAs for a lot of it, how he was understanding the defense and getting really, really smart. And now we are seeing him on practice field and it's translating. So they may want to wait a little bit because he's been operating with the twos as well. But the way he keeps making plays, and I think he's going to force the issue, and they're going to quickly get to a point where it's Delpit, Hickman, and Emmanuel McNeil Warren, and they're going to want to push that as much as possible.
So the guys we've taken in the first two rounds, we took in the first two rounds this last year, all are coming out of the blocks pretty strong, in your opinion. Are there any of the rookies that you're worried about?
Yeah, well, I mean, by virtue of his situation, I'm worried about Joe Royer because
– yeah.
But, you know, I've been impressed by Austin Barber. In conversations I've had and just my impression as well, everybody I've talked to and just looking at him, he's thicker than everybody expected. Like everybody knew he was a very tall, athletic tackle, but he's thick and he's shown the ability to move guys off the ball a little bit today. So I'm sure they're excited about what he can do now, what that's going to really translate to. Are they going to get to a point where they are worried, you know, their guard situation is bad enough where they're going to end up sliding him in there? I hope that's not the case, that they've been playing almost exclusively tackle. I think they really like what they're getting from him. And I know they like Parker Brailsford. Just a question of, is he going to be, and today was the start of it, is he going to be able to hold up the physicality? Was he able to put on the weight necessary? Because, you know, hopefully Vita Vea gets traded, hopefully somewhere in California where the Browns don't play. Because the first like seven games of their schedule, they play somebody who's like 330 right in the middle of the defense. So it's a lot right. to ask this kid to go in, be the starting center. That would certainly solve a lot of their problems. And then the guy I really like, and I've already mentioned Taylen Green. I'm impressed by what I see with Taylen Green. But the guy I really liked that they got, I haven't seen a whole lot of Justin Jefferson, to be fair. I can't really comment too much on him. The guy I love is Carson Ryan. I just think they're going to find so many ways to use him. It's a lot of fun. Now, the fullback thing, I haven't seen him do much yet. I suspect that's where they'd love to get some use out of him, because that would solve a lot of problems. But they use him in a wide variety of things, from flex, wing, all kinds of stuff. And then he's going to be on special teams too.
All right. Well, look who is backstage now, brought into the show. It is Mr. Freddie Greedham. How you doing, Fred?
Not doing too bad.
Well, that's good to hear. It's good to hear. You're very busy this time of year. We've already talked a little bit about the quarterbacks. Just wanted to get your perspective on that quickly as well. Pete, I don't want to speak for him. He speaks so well for himself.
I'll tell him. Fred, if this is a horse race, Deshaun Watson should be euthanized on the track.
Yeah, that's a little blunter way to say it. You know, I really have thought all along, trying to scratch my head, you know, on how they have went out of their way to continually say Deshaun, Deshaun, Deshaun. Mm-hmm. And in the back of my mind, I'm saying it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you know, to push him, other than you can't come out and say, we're done with this guy. He's going to sit at home. We're never going to put him in. You know, there's all kinds of ramifications, you know, and I don't think they would do that anyway, but I think Shador, you know, with what you have, you go with the young guys and see what you have. And if you don't have anything, then you know for sure what you have to do next off season.
Right.
I don't think Deshaun Watson's your future, no matter what Jimmy Haslam said or Andrew Berry said. I think they have to say those things. And so I am intrigued with Taylen Green and the possibilities there. And you know, even Dylan Gabriel, you know, as little bit they've given him, he's looked pretty good. Mm-hmm. And Shador, you know, I don't know what Pete thinks about this, but he's the type of guy that he just doesn't do anything until he has to do something. Like the end, he didn't really stand out today. Last play, boom, he finishes with a flare, drops it right in the basket, you know, and you're like, wow, you know. Now, I can't really explain it. I don't know if he's going to run away with, you know, from Watson, but if he stays right, you know, where he's at, I just don't know why you wouldn't go with him over Watson, because of the upside potential.
Yeah, we just played the clip of that pretty throw to
Hazel Harden.
Yeah, yeah. Someone, we have Real Pro on the sidelines operating that iPhone. really nice pitch and catch there. So, you know, from your perspective right now, what do we do with Deshaun Watson? I mean, you can't cut him. No one's going to trade for him. You're stuck with him this year. And you've got three other quarterbacks on the roster who seem to have more potential. Let's start with you, Pete. How do you see this playing out?
Scout team safety. The Houston Texans showed us the way.
The scout team safety.
And, like, this is all you can do. Like, they cannot say they have not given him an honest try. They have. And it is not working. And, like, he's the 10-year vet. And he's making mistakes that no one else is making. And, you know, the Shador thing, I don't think he has to be anything super special, honestly, because at least right now, just the way I sort of view this offense, is they have enough weapons. If he protects the ball and he's smart and he just gets the ball to those guys, they will be okay. Will they be a dynamic offense? Are they going to be the reincarnation of the 99 Rams? No. But they will at least move the ball and hopefully, you know, keep their defense out of harm's way. And then let those guys make plays. And with the running backs they have, that could be enough to be decent. That's, to me, where I think this is going. Now, hopefully, it's, again, as we sit here on August 3rd, I hope by the time they get to week one that his confidence has grown. He's doing more of the things they want to see, and maybe that's there. But I want him to keep growing through the lens of also protecting the football, which he's done a really good job of so far.
Same question to you, Fred. What do you? How do you see this playing out? You see him as a scout safety, or what are we gonna see here?
Yeah, it. I don't know if they would do what Houston did and say, you know, just don't show up. You know, they've said he's a good citizen and all that. And if you got to keep him, I don't know how you. He's not on the 53. If you. Mm-hmm. I guess, unless you just put him on some reserve list. But, yeah, I really think when it's all said and done that Monken's going to go with who he thinks will help him beat Jacksonville and or Tampa Bay. Because in his first year, whatever he's doing, he's not thinking about the future now. He does not want to go 0-2 and bury his season. And so if he really thinks Watson's going to give him the best chance to win in a hostile environment, I think he'd go with him. But I really think at the end, the decision will be, we have much more upside going with Sanders. We can do things with him. Like you said, there's no separation, you know, from Watson at all. You just think even a 10-year veteran that he would play even like he did in that last game when he played that year against Baltimore where he just dink and dunked, just do that stuff and get the ball out quick to your playmakers. Yeah. And he seems, at least to this point, not willing to do that or not being able to even execute that. I don't know what all the plays are called, but, yeah, I just can't equate it. I don't know. But I do think that the rest of the team would know if he's not giving them the best chance to win. I think there will be some of these games I think he's going to play. They're going to play them, see what they look like against the Bears. And against the Bills, I think, would be a separator. If Shador can just hold his own, I think he would end up, you know, getting the nod what I'm saying.
I was here pounding the table back in May saying that if it's close at all between Watson and Shedeur Sanders, it's got to be Sanders for a multiplicity of reasons. But it sounds to me like it's not close. And Shedeur Sanders could use more reps. So you're giving it till later this week. Would you be surprised to see the reps, Fred, change significantly toward the end of this week?
I don't think so. I think he's committed to alternating through this week and maybe even in up until with the Bears game, because I don't think whoever he decides, even if to me the drop dead date would be the Bills, because then after that joint, you got to have a real good idea going against the Bills,
right?
Number ones in practice. Not so much the preseason game. I don't know if they'll even play those guys in that second preseason game. But the next week, you know, you have your last preseason game and you can do your dress rehearsal and put your starters out there. And then you have 3 weeks before, because they got that extra week now, you know, with this. So until the first game. So you'd have, like, if you name them after the Bills week, you got 3 weeks to get ready for that September 13th, and I think that's plenty of time. I cannot imagine he would want to keep drawing it out beyond that, but I don't think he's going to switch the alternating thing this week. I'd be very surprised if they name anybody before the Bears.
I think they'll go for it. They are not, in my scenario, they would not be naming a quarterback. The horse race with the euthanized horse on the track would be the other two horses. In this case, it would now transition to Shedeur versus Dylan. That's where I think this is going to head. And look, Todd Monken can play this out as long as he wants. And I've heard and I understand the idea of the joint practice is just sort of the day that they want to have this thing figured out. But I think if you go into that coach's office and you say, and you're honest with yourself and you're looking at this and you go, how is this going to get better? And if you can't come up with a reasonable answer on that, what are we doing? And that's why I said Thursday is their last offensive install day. So Friday is when this thing really gets going. It doesn't necessarily mean that they need to eliminate Deshaun's reps on Friday, though I'm not against that. But I think that's when you guys start pulling. So now it becomes, we shift from Deshaun, who's just an unserious quarterback at this point. You keep rolling Shedeur, and then if you want to see what this Dylan thing is. You want to see if Dylan Gabriel's going to keep coming along. If he's not, okay, then fine. Then name the starter. But my point is, look, I honestly didn't care if they went with a four-way competition, because I just think that's not super important. But if you're gonna try to get this thing done in a sort of reasonable amount of time, I think it should really just be changing which two are competing for the job.
Well, I think in the preseason games, my way too early prediction is I think Gabriel's going to look really good, you know, against the third and fourth string guys.
Right.
And I think Taylen Green is going to be all Berea, you know, he's going to, think about this, a guy that's 6'5", 6'6", runs a 4'3", 6'40", playing against a bunch of guys like you, me, and Pete, you know, that are going to be cut, you know, because we know in those second, third preseason games, you're playing the whole second half with guys that are not going to be on the team because they don't want the other teams don't want anybody to get hurt. They're all going to be out of the NFL. And when you have a 4-3 quarterback, he's going to take off and run for 60 yards. And he's going to – everybody in Browns fans are going to be going, he's got to be the quarterback. Because I remember DTR in the preseason his rookie year. Everybody thought he was going to be the challenger, even fooled Andrew Berry into trading away the backup. We all know how that worked out. So that, to me, I don't want them to get ahead of their skis, because we know how – quarterbacks get hurt in Brownstown, and if you trade away Gabriel or something and you only have three, and Watson, who if he's on the roster, he's very injury prone, if those two guys get hurt, then you're sitting there, Talon Green's, you know, starting already. And maybe that would be like the worst thing that could happen for him, to throw him out before he's ready. So I don't know how they're going to navigate it, but I think he's going to do too much that they won't be able to put him on the practice squad. That's just my opinion, that even though he's a sixth round pick, when he gets out there, people go, whoa, you can't teach that speed. You can't teach that arm. And all these coaches think they're the smartest guy in the room that can correct it and make him into a player. So,
right,
you know, that so that is
going to be intriguing. We're looking to carry four quarterbacks on the roster, then, is the way this turns
not,
out.
It's not impossible, but look, I've said all along, I think I agree with Fred, Dylan's going to torch it. Torch teams, he's going to have rogue receivers out there because the Browns, unless they have a rash of injuries, they have legit guys who are going to be, you know, guys that may not make the Browns. They may be trade for player that we're not going to keep for player you're not going to keep type deals at the end of this thing. Like Malachi Corley and, you know, a guy who's theoretically at best seventh on the depth chart at this point, like, let's say he's not going to make it. I'm not saying that because I actually think he's doing some good things. He's going to kill preseason with Dylan Gabriel. They already have a pretty good connection. So, like, you're going to see stuff, and you're going to get people saying irrational things, to Fred's point. But there's no way they're letting Talon Green out of the building. They know – this is not to say that Talon Green is eventually going to be the starter, though. Who knows? But he's already shown enough where you're like, I want to see more. I want to see how far this can go.
Right, right. All right. Well, we have talked about quarterback to a certain degree here. Let's talk about some of the other positions. And one of them that you brought up, Pete, earlier was left tackle, where Spencer Fanau appears to be the designated left tackle as DeJuan Jones struggles a bit. Check out this play from earlier today. Watch number 8, verse. On that play, and let me rewind that. Play that again. That's up against Jones, right?
They whistled it dead as a sack. Mm.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's why these, you know, quarterback trackers and crap like that that you see floating around the media is absolutely meaningless, because that would have been a sack. For sure. That would have been a quarterback giving up a sack for sure. But Jared Verse, his impact on those left tackles, I would suspect, is going to be immense. Do you think that Verse is going to help Fano get ready, Pete, for this season? You think that's an advantage the Browns now have?
Yes, in particular, because it's not a question of whether Fano is athletic or not. He is supremely athletic. It's a question of, can he hold up against NFL power? And Jared Verse is arguably the most powerful edge rusher in the NFL. So if he can handle a bull rush from Jared Verse, and I've seen it reasonably up close, it is ferocious just how much power he's able to jolt into the opponent. If he can handle that, he's going to be fine. Now, you know, the balance of that, but like the trade-off here is that, like, Verse can use that. Now he's trying to sort of improve in other areas, but when he brings that thing out, man, it's impressive. So you've got that. Fano's trying to get accustomed to that element and then do all the other stuff. So I think it's great for them. And not to be sort of left out of this thing, and we can debate whether this is a question of how good the other tackle spot is. Alex Wright playing his ass off. Like, he has been really impactful throughout camp in terms of blowing up plays and doing everything else. So, like, obviously they traded Garrett and they extended Alex Wright, and the bet they have made on Alex Wright to this point looks to be paying off. Now, again, maybe that will change when we get to real football and he's not going against Browns players, but he has been really impressive in terms of what he's been doing.
Yeah, Fred, the Browns chased after Jadeveon Clowney, looking for a little bit more defensive end help. They signed a little bit of defensive tackle help today. If you're Isaiah McGuire and the Browns are looking at Jadeveon Clowney, are you worried about your position on this team? Or is Clowney would he have been just a specialty pass rusher, you know, who shows up 8 times a game.
Well, they've admitted they need a fourth guy. You know, when Cameron Thomas isn't a household name, but they talked about him all the time as one of their top four, and he left as a free agent, and they replaced him with the reported signing of A.J. Epinesa of the Bills, who had 6.5 sacks. Well, for whatever reason, he failed the physical. I don't know how that works, because he then signed with another team. But the Browns never signed another veteran defensive end. I fully expected them to, if they didn't draft somebody, to sign one of those 30-something, I always call the 30-something list during training camp, that for whatever reason, guys that don't get signed. And I think Clowney was the first one they went after. I fully expect them to try to get another one of them guys. Now, I don't know how many are even available. I know Hassan Reddick. I know Joey Bosa. But most of those guys are waiting to see. They want to go to a playoff team or, you know, that type of thing. So I don't know how successful probably be. I haven't even looked at the list of guys available. But as far as Isaiah McGuire, I know they like him. I would say he's 3. I think he's playing for an extension himself. They may just let him go after this year, or they may extend him. But I know from spending time with Alex Wright, I was up at that speaking engagement, and he was there with me. Got to talk to him a bit. And, of course, that was before the Miles trade. But he was really motivated to become a leader and to step out. And I think he's even more motivated now. He sees this opportunity, even though Verse is here, to make his own mark, you know, in the world of edge rushers. And he's motivated, seeing where Verse comes in and immediately looks like he's more taking up the Garrett slack than maybe the perception is that Wright is. So I think he's motivated. I think that he's hoping to have a big year as well. But McGuire, I think, figures in. Right now it's the third guy, but I don't think you really want to necessarily have a bunch of undrafted rookies, you know, in the rotation. I mean, maybe Aiden Huntington, but I still think they're gonna need to add somebody at defensive end, and I'd like to see him add a veteran outside corner, you know, that can, because I don't know if Pete's brought this up, but when you see part of the reason, like even today, the numbers look better to me when you're playing the second defense, whatever quarterback is because you're going against D'Angelo Ross and Trey Avery at corner instead of my Denzel Ward and Tyson Campbell. And I'm not that impressed with those guys. They seem more like they're like special teams guys.
You see the same need, Pete, at outside corner to supplement what we have?
Yeah, but the Browns are hoping that Damari Mathis can be that guy. They definitely would like him to be that, because he is he's pretty close to the most experienced corner outside of the top two at this point. So they want him to get up to speed as fast as possible and be able to earn that job if he can help it. Other than that, they would be looking. As far as edge goes, Jadeveon Clowney would have been DB4. He would have been here just to rush the passer. People can tell me all about, oh, he's a great run defender. He's not going to Houston to stop the run. He's not coming here. He wouldn't have been coming here to stop the run. They needed him to rush the passer. And they still need a fourth edge if they can help it. And I still don't know why the dude left for Atlanta in the first place. And I wouldn't be shocked if there's some trade that ends up having him come back, depending on what happens with NFL deciding whether or not to suspend their first-round pick from James Pierce last year, because they've got a boatload of guys over there. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Browns end up getting somebody from that team, because Mike Rutenberg knows all those guys. They need more pass rush. And yes, to Fred's point, Isaiah McGuire would love to earn an extension. We shall see if he can do it, because right now they basically got 3 very good run-stopping base ends, and Jared Verse, good pass rusher, and Alex Wright might be an okay pass rusher, and Isaiah McGuire has flashed as a pass rusher. So that's the glaring need from the edge.
Right. You think the Cleveland Browns might have a good opportunity to get some pressure up the middle on the passer this year with Graham and Hall coming back. Fred, have you been impressed by what you've seen in camp?
You know, I was following Verse for that story, and they were on that sled, that two-man sled on practice get off, like a little race. I don't know what it's called, but Mike Hall was against Verse, and he was really pumping his fist and raising a lot of noise because he got off quicker than Verse, and Verse is known for his takeoff. I think the three I watched, I think Hall beat him two out of the three, and he was pretty proud of that. If that motivates that guy to start doing something, I know he's been injured, but he really needs to step up this year because they need play on the inside from him, especially with not knowing exactly where Malik Collins is. Mason Graham looks great so far in everything I'm seeing. So, yeah, I think there's no reason. That's kind of what they wanted to get with the defensive tackles is not those 350-pound guys that just take up space, but guys that can get after the passer up the middle. And that's what Hall was drafted in the second round to do. That's kind of what Mason Graham was also billed as well. So I expect both of them to have a chance to really make their mark this year.
I mean, that's the bet. That's the bet the Browns are making. That is another element of the Myles Garrett trade, is because they have taken Mason Graham fifth overall. They've drafted Mike Hall in the second round. They signed Malik Collins. And even if you think Malik Collins might not be here after this year because he's last year of his deal, they're going to have to do something else. Maybe they extend Malik. Maybe they go get somebody else. They want the defensive tackle to be a much bigger factor. Jacques Césaire said that basically Mason Graham, in his mind, had six sacks that he was sort of robbed of last year. And what I've seen from Mason Graham, he has transformed his body. He's way more built for what they want him to do now in terms of being on the ball. He has really, really shined in drills. Mike missed practice today. Very minor. He'll be fine. But when he's been on the field, he's been very good. So the question with him, as it's been since he got here, can he stay healthy? To be determined. And can he be consistent? We'll see. But in terms of, is he showing you the ability that gets you excited about Mason Graham and Mike Hall? Yes. Hopefully it stays that way and there's no setback or anything else, because those guys are really causing a lot of havoc, both as run defenders getting up the field and pass rushers. And to Fred's point, this team does not seem to want big, heavy guys. Even the guy they signed today is another more athletic, upfield type guy. They want guys who can move up and down the line. You get these big, hulking 350-pound guy, 330, 350, whatever. If they are not supremely athletic, then teams just sort of stretch and force them to work laterally and put them at a major disadvantage. The Browns are pretty well equipped to deal with teams who want to run zone, who want to work laterally and do those types of things. Those guys are really well equipped for that. And I think, you know, even if we roll this thing into next year and they're looking for more defensive tackle help, I think those are the type of guys you're going to get. We haven't seen Kalia Davis in a minute. He left practice hurt last week. He's another in that mold, but he's more of a nose from that standpoint.
A guy we talked a lot about last year really showed up in preseason, made a name for himself on special teams, among other things, was Aiden Huntington. Haven't heard his name very much at all this preseason. What is he doing, Fred? Have you seen him and where are they playing him?
I haven't really, he hasn't really stood out. I haven't followed him around as of yet. But, yeah, I mean, last year he was the talk of camp. My famous question to Kevin Stefanski, and he said, well, I'll give you that one. He's making the team, you know. For a guy who never gave up information, he told us that undrafted free agent made the team. I don't know. They used him at fullback. They used him very versatile. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really heard much of him so far. I mean, I see him out there. But, again, as Pete would say, when there's 90 guys, unless you're honing in on one group, it's kind of hard to to get one to cover them all.
For sure. You know,
in five practices.
Nope, today was the day. We put pads on. Aiden Huntington's been working almost exclusively inside. He's at tackle. In pads, this is where Aiden Huntington comes to life, because yes, he's athletic and that sort of stands out. It's his pop. It's his ability. It, similar to Mike Hall, these are not huge people. They're so quick that when they're with the strength, particularly a guy like Aiden Huntington has, he's so explosive that his jolt stands out. And we put the pads on today. I watched these guys do one-on-ones, and you see where Aiden Huntington comes to life when he can really let it go and get there. Now, is that going to translate into Aiden Huntington, Brown star? No, probably maybe not. But like, I think you can see why. Obviously, when they signed him as an undrafted rookie last year, I said he was going to make a good shot to make the team. He did. I see the same thing with him last year, and I think he's going to be in a similar mold. And again, that's partly because they don't have enough guys. They went. Right. I think they had basically eight guys that were pretty good bets to make the roster, and then you would like that thing.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I think Huntington, you know, and Sam Kamara, the reason he's been around so long, because they can play inside or outside in a pinch. You know, I think Huntington originally was going to be on the edge, and like Pete said, he was started there last year, but he was listed as the backup D tackle last year, and that's where so those bigger guys, but they're quicker guys, you know, can move them in and out. And I think versatility is the key. If they're athletic, they feel like they could play inside, outside, and so forth all the way around. So I'm looking forward to getting an eye on him, seeing how he does here.
Keep in mind, practices. The way they run their defensive line, they're going to be doing a lot of stunting. And a guy, Jared Verse, is huge for this. Because if when you saw clips when they signed him of seeing him just jolt unsuspecting right guards and send them into outer space, essentially, Aiden Huntington has that same ability. If you're not paying attention and he suddenly widens out on a hard angle, he can clear space and set up a twist, some kind of a looping stunt. So that's where, again, some of these guys are pads guys. I think Aiden Huntington falls firmly in that basket. Whereas a guy, Mason Graham, is certainly good with pads on, but he really stood out without them because of just how athletic he is and his skill set. But yeah, that's where this team's going to go. So I think Aiden Huntington, you know, for anybody who's sitting there going, well, you know, Jim Schwartz liked him, are these guys? I don't think there's any concern on that front.
Well, a guy who doesn't wear pads but is getting some good press right now is new defensive coordinator Mike Rutenberg. You've seen Jim Schwartz, Fred, for the last few years. Now you get to see Rutenberg on the sidelines. What are your impressions of him so far?
Oh, he's just a mile a minute. I mean, Schwartz was animated, but this guy runs all over the place, got his hat on backwards. He's yelling, he's screaming. He's, you know, got a lot of nice quips and lines about oxygen, the ball's oxygen. I think the proof's going to be when they start playing, but everything looks good. And, you know, I think the defense, even without Garrett, still has a chance to be a top 10, top five defense. And I think taking the ball away is so important, you know, for this. I know they all say that, and Schwartz said that. But they really have been taking the ball away. You know, I don't think they did today, but they had five Saturday, I think, interceptions. And, you know, then you look at, is that because the quarterbacks were so bad? But they were getting their hands on balls. I mean, one was a strip out of the hands that Edmonds returned, I think, for a touchdown. And so, yeah, I think with the guys, with what they want to do with the safety – the safeties look long, you know, they got long arms and they get their hands on the ball. And I think McNeil Warren is going to be a big asset. And if they play three safeties, I think if this pass rush can get any pressure, I think they will be able to get some takeaways. Quincy Williams is, you know, he's a ball of fire and he's Rutenberg's disciple. And so I just, he's really bought in. I think the rest of them have bought in as well. And so we'll see how it translates into the games.
Yeah, the Browns today released a, had a little film clip they put on their Twitter page. And it showed Emmanuel McNeil Warren closing on a receiver extremely quickly. How good do you think he can be, Pete, based on what you've seen of McNeil Warren so far?
Well, I mean, still early because he missed so much time. But look, right. I mean, let's start here. I would like the chance to ask Rhett Delp this, but I'm sure he has to notice the fact that they Efren Banda just went out and got four more of him in terms of body type. They're all 6'2", 200 pounds, long arms, hands across America type situation where all these guys are just, they take up so much space. They're physical. They do a lot of things from that standpoint. So I think he can be a really big asset. He seems like he plays with good instincts. And it's difficult because you watch him at Toledo and it felt like he was sort of the backstop for everything. If because he's so much more talented than everybody else, he had to fix so much. So here, he's going to enter a situation where he's not clearly the best player on the team. He's got a bunch of guys he can count on, and that's going to allow him to be more downhill, more aggressive, play to the things I think that are going to be good for him in this defense, and hopefully that's going to result in takeaways, to Fred's point. Look, I think Mike Rutenberg, and I think this of Todd Monken as well, regardless of how they do, I think they are really well-suited for this roster. Both guys are trying to prove that they belong. So is this entire roster. And I think that's a really good fit energy-wise in terms of Mike Rutenberg is all about energy. He gets on coaches about being energetic. He gets on players about being energetic. And this defense is super fast. It's super active. And, yes, they want to do all these things, which these are things I criticize Schwartz on. You're seeing more of those things. Now, if he has a bunch of coverage busts, we're going to sit here and yell at him for doing too many things. But they're trying to do a lot. Show heavy pressure, drop guys out. They're trying to roll safeties. They're trying to spoke. They're trying to do all this stuff to try to cause confusion and disguise what they want to do so the quarterback's never sure. And by virtue of Deshaun Watson is certainly making them look like they're doing a great job. We shall see if that translates into real football. And I'm hoping if they just eliminate some of the issues that Jim Schwartz's unit have where they just give up big plays and they have more consistency – it will level off the drop off that they will experience by not having Myles Garrett here.
The one thing I'd say about McNeil Warren, I think that it could be a Harold Fannin case. There's something about, because it's the Mac, like Bowling Green, that it probably won't translate to the NFL. Well, you saw what it did with Fannin his first year. And I think that might be with McNeil Warren, Toledo. You've seen many good players come out of the MAC, and I think that will really translate and really has a chance to with him. And I also kind of think we all know with JOK, unfortunately, where he's at. But if you remember, everybody kind of thought, well, he's a tweener, you know, where's he going to be? And the Browns traded up about the same area and got him, and he was probably Barry's best draft choice up until the last 2 years was JOK. And I think he might turn out being one of those as well because of his skill set. And I think maybe he just got, you know, put down a little bit because he played at Toledo.
Right. The Browns are taking advantage of Mac being underrated perhaps here for a couple of years in a row. Let's talk about another receiver. Got a little clip of him right here. Denzel Boston, and I know, Fred, you were tracking Denzel a little bit today as he right there grabs the ball and gets some nice yardage from Shedeur Sanders. But so much buzz about Denzel Boston coming out.
Barry took himself right out of the
– Yeah, I clicked the wrong thing. There we go. Just incompetent operator of the console. But Denzel Boston obviously getting a lot of hype coming out of Berea. perhaps a little bit more than Concepcion at this point. So I want to talk to you first, Pete, about Denzel Boston, what you've seen about him so far and his potential to emerge as a number one somewhere down the road.
Well, so far he's proving me wrong because I thought he'd be a very, very good possession receiver and maybe a little bit more than that. And based that on his body control and certain other things. But this is where, you know, people make fun of the data and all this stuff. The data said he'd be really good at all this stuff. His PFF gas score game, you know, his in-game athleticism was spectacular. He is very quick. And what I think is happening is a similar deal to Jackson Smith and Jigba. Jackson Smith and Jigba ran a 4.5 something. And people sort of thought of him as a, you know, not that fast, but it's his body control, his three cone, his shuttle, that he never has to slow down. So he's easily able to create separation. And then the biggest thing he keeps proving, and you know, he can happily dunk on me, I'll take it all day, is his ability to make plays down the field. And I think the conclusion I'm coming to is just Washington was incapable of getting the ball there, because everything was underneath and short and all this other stuff. And he makes a play every practice down the field. So, you know, the Browns will probably try, you know, one, I know they are very quietly excited. You know, when you have people coming up to you, go, Denzel Boston, right? You sort of get a sense of how they feel about him. But, you know, I think they're going to try to, they're trying to ease him in. But I think ultimately they're going to think this guy can sort of truly replace what they lost in Amari Cooper.
You know, I am writing about this a little bit tomorrow, is that it might work into his advantage that he felt slighted. He's very motivated that he didn't go in the first round, you know. And to be honest, if the Browns thought he was the best receiver, they would have taken him at 24, not Casey Concepcion. And so, you know, I think that's a good thing. You know, I don't know the motivation factor, but athletes get motivated different ways to try to prove themselves. Mm-hmm. But as far as, he's very confident in himself, he glides to me very smoothly on his pass patterns and goes up and gets the ball. And I think that, you know, you'd be happy if one of those two guys, Concepcion and Boston, can immediately contribute, you know, and help. But it looks like both of them are going to be, you know, in the top, you know, three or four of the rotation. And that's going to make whoever's the quarterback better. I mean, if they just do little 5-yard slants or get the ball to Concepcion and Bond and Boston, that's going to do more for the offense than anything. And even the offensive line, you know, it's just get those guys the ball, you know, and you got playmakers. You got more depth than you did before. I mean, not taken away, but like Cedric Tillman couldn't stay on the field. And then the other guys, you know, maybe were just not ready either. Gage, Lavardin. I mean, you were counting on undrafted rookies last year,
right?
You know, to make plays. And these guys, even Boston mentioned, you know, he played in the Big Ten. All the guys, the teams he's playing against, all have NFL defenses or NFL defensive coordinators.
Right.
And so he's used to this. It's not exactly the same level, but he feels like it's almost like minor league, you know, that you're being prepped. And so it's not as big a jump as maybe it is somewhere else. At least he didn't feel like it was that big of a transition for him.
Right. More rigorous tests than lesser leagues, like the Big 12 and the SEC.
Big 19.
A Washington receiver is proudly calling himself a Big 10 receiver at this
point. I know.
Yeah, it is weird.
I think it's the Big 19, you know, or whatever. How many teams they got in that?
It needs to be the Manifest Destiny Conference. We're trying to go from sea to shining sea.
Well, it's working for them based on last year's results.
Well, that's my favorite. I chuckle when they – that's – digressing, but that commercial where they show the Big Ten, it used to just be, you know, and now it takes about a half hour to go from California to the East Coast.
all the way to Rutgers. Let's talk about our other rookie receiver who's doing pretty well, seems to be doing pretty well so far, Pete. I'm not hearing any narratives on Casey Concepcion dropping footballs right now. That's all I was hearing a few months ago. How does he look to you?
He's just incredibly gifted in terms of getting in and out of breaks. Like, it's effortless. Watch him run like a curl and nobody's near him. And so, like, he took a simple bubble, like a simple quick screen, and it just, the way he gets in and out of his breaks, it's incredible. And he's a guy who I've said all along, and I know other outlets have picked up on this, whether they've taken it for me, I'll assume they're taking it for me. I think he's going to be better at that. I think he's going to be better because he was so impactful in terms of being able to keep his balance, bounce off defenders, and keep going. I think that's really going to be an area where he shines. So I know there was some, like, and that's sort of what happens. You go, well, Denzel Boston's doing great. Denzel Boston's crushing it. And that's all true. And then the immediate reaction is, well, that must mean that Casey Concepcion's not doing very well. And it's not true. It's just that Denzel Boston was that impactful that fast. Casey Concepcion is really good. Boston about this. And he sort of said the same thing, which is the Browns' skill sets in terms of body types and athletic profiles at the receiver position really, really meshes well. And that you have all these guys that do these different things. And yes, I've been really impressed by Casey Concepcion. And I know Eternal Optimist Zach Jackson noted today that that those two receivers are miles ahead of everybody else. It would not surprise me. Now, I'm not nearly as down on Jerry Jeudy as some other people are, but to me, I just want more good. More good is more better. So I'm excited to see those three and Isaiah Bond really get it going. But yes, he obviously went down with a minor shoulder thing today. Hopefully won't cause him to miss much time, if any. But those guys being up and going, you see them get better and better and better. And part of that is this is an element of the draft as a whole. They pick the right guys in terms of how they are, how they tick. Denzel Boston is extremely bright. You can tell just listening to him, he's very smart. Casey Concepcion comes with an incredibly good reputation as far as being a good guy, hard worker, all this other stuff. He even came into, like, it's his rookie press conference. People are going, well, what are you going to do about those drops? And he's talking about the stuff he's going to do. Spencer Fano, same thing. These are guys who just want to work. Austin Barber, same deal. I mean, like, you go down the list and all you find are guys, you're like, you find guys that you said, of course they're going to be successful because they're really athletic, they're really skilled, and they do the stuff that you sit there and go, well, everybody should be like this.
Right, right. Let's, Fred, it's our last question tonight. Let's talk about one other receiver who has been getting rave reviews, just endless torrents of good news about the wide receiver position coming from Berea. We'll see if it holds up, you know, when the bullets start flying. But Isaiah Bond getting a lot of positive press out of Berea recently. Is he sort of a hidden advantage that these Cleveland Browns are going to have in 2026 that might be flying under the radar for some folks?
Well, I think so. You know, last year he had some off the field situations, so he didn't get drafted until that got sorted out. And so he was an undrafted free agent, and he was projected from everything I had seen probably in the second round. Mm-hmm. The Browns were able to get him, but he didn't get in till training camp about this time, maybe last year. So he really didn't have off-season program. And when you come into those things late, you think of the old days when guys would hold out. A lot of times them seasons turned into a wasted season. You know, they missed so much. And Bond was playing catch up all the way along. He started making plays as the season went on. And so I think he's been here all off season. He's really looked good to me, you know, even before the draft. I think, you know, he was right there with Jeudy or right behind him as the number two. You bring in these two rookies, I think he's definitely, you know, if not a starter, one of the four in the rotation. I think he brings an element of, you know, what they want to do getting outside. I think I had a clip today in one of the socials on X of him taking a, you know, an end around or a jet sweep or something. I think he's got that speed. But unlike Anthony Schwartz, I think it's football speed where he can turn on a dime like Concepcion and not just like a track star. Like Schwartz could never, beside not catching, he could never really turn the corner. This guy can turn the corner. So I think that's another element, you know, to put stress on the defense. They can't double team. You know, you can get situations with Concepcion, Boston, Judy, Bond, Harold Fannin, they can't cover them all. And so, to Pete's point, the more stress you can put on the defense, better situation. I think Bond really can really make this go. He might be an under the radar because the two rookies are getting a lot of the attention. And, of course, Jerry Jeudy. But Isaiah Bond has been doing, making nice plays, what I've been seeing throughout camp.
Come on, Fred, say it. Say more good is more better. But as far as Isaiah Bond goes, look, he has proven that he can be a field stretcher. That was mission one. He can do that. And that was all for an undrafted free agent. That's plenty. He can be a very good wide receiver for every second game, catching a 40-yard pass or whatever and doing that. What he's trying to do, and it's having mixed results, is trying to be more than that. It's trying to do the full thing. And there's where you see some inconsistency in terms of hands, in terms of figuring this stuff out. And to Fred's point, like Isaiah Bond in college between Alabama and Texas was just never really developed. And I'm not blaming anyone for that. But then coming in late, it just felt like he was swimming the entire time last year. And yes, he made a few plays, but he wasn't in the right place a lot of the time. His awareness wasn't very good. And he's another guy who has been great this offseason, is really big. And look, I am really impressed with, and I think a lot of this is Munkin's influence, with what I'm seeing in terms of receiver development. And I would extend that to Malachi Corley, who came out of college out of Western Kentucky. And he was a guy they just gave the ball to and said, go. And he needed to develop more as a receiver. And he's certainly not a polished receiver by any stretch, but you're seeing a more nuanced game to him than what he was last year, which was essentially a motioning battering ram at times when they gave him the ball. So I like with what I'm seeing from that. So if you squint, you can see a world where Denzel Boston, Casey Concepcion, and Isaiah Bond are sort of the three receivers that sort of are the future, along with Harold Fannin. If that proves to be true, the Browns are in pretty good shape going forward. But obviously, we want to see them continue to grow and get better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it is nice, you know, this year talking about some guys with some obvious talent and not banking on the undrafted free agent wide receiver of the year. We've had quite a few of those years, haven't we, Fred, where we've seen undrafted free agents become the star of camp at wide receiver. We got through the show. We didn't even talk about the running game. We have to make sure we talk about the running game next week here on Gang of Three. Thanks for watching. Appreciate it. Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Fred, for filling in for Lane tonight. And we will see you all next Monday night on Gang of Three. Good night, everybody.
See ya.
Hello, and welcome to Plutophone. If you know the name of the movie you'd like to see, just stream it for free on Pluto TV, where all your blockbuster favorites are landing all summer long. Catch Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Fantastic!
The Matrix Trilogy.
Welcome to the real world.
Mean Girls.
Shut up!
Titanic.
I'm the king of the world!
And so much more. For showtimes, press nothing. They're free 24/7.
That is so fetch.
On Pluto TV. Stream now, pay never.